But first, it's been a hectic week, another one, in American politics.
It was a big night for Democrats as the party swept key races across the country, gaining momentum against President Trump and Republicans ahead of the 2026 midterm elections.
So Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have four words for you. Turn the volume up.
Virginia chose pragmatism over partisanship. We chose our commonwealth over chaos.
The shutdown was a big factor, negative for the Republicans. And that was a big factor. And they say that I wasn't on the ballot was the biggest factor.
Yes, big victories for the Democrats in the mayoral race in New York City. You heard there from Zohan Mamdani, a politician who delights in calling himself a democratic socialist. And there were significant wins in the governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia. That was the voice of Abigail Spanberger, a moderate centrist Democrat who used to work for the CIA. President Donald Trump essentially saying that a terrible night for the Republicans had nothing to do with him. I've been talking to Ross Barkin, who's the editor-in-chief of the Metropolitan Review, a columnist for New York Magazine, and the author of a forthcoming book on Zohran Mamdani. Ross Barkin, thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Well, it's an exciting time on the Democratic side of politics. I think you have to go back to the emergence of Barack Obama in 2004 with his breakthrough speech at the Democratic Convention for a politician who has created such a buzz. Then we were talking about Obama mania. Did we witness this week Mamdani mania?
To an extent, we did. I mean, there are a lot of parallels between the rise of Barack Obama and the rise of Zohran Mamdani. If anything, Zohran Mamdani rose faster and from deeper obscurity. You know, he was a state assemblyman and not well known at all. I mean, polling at close to 0% last October. And even Obama had his DNC speech. He had several years as a rumored presidential candidate. Then he shoots to the White House. I mean, Zohran Mamdani, in a matter of months, became a local sensation, then a national sensation, and now an international sensation. So it truly is remarkable.
It's an extraordinary rise. I wonder what explains his appeal.
There's a few factors at play. I mean, one is he's authentic seeming, and he has a compelling message. You know, the message around affordability, addressing the cost of living crisis. You know, being a populist, being also, you know, both a proud leftist, but someone who's anti-establishment. And then you take in his native charisma, which you can't teach, his adept use of social media and his large volunteer base, which partially came out of that. And some of that he had from the beginning, being a part of the Democratic Socialists of America. So you have, you know, someone who's an unabashed progressive, which helps with young people. You have someone who's a great communicator and who has some of that Obama style charisma, and someone also is really going against the establishment in a time where there is an anti-establishment current pulsing through America.
He's made many promises, many bold promises, many seductive promises about free bus travel and rent freezes, which in New York City, which is an extraordinarily expensive place to live. I mean, that is obviously going to have appeal. But there's a difference, as you know, Ross, between making these bold promises on the campaign trail and actually delivering them in office. What chance does he actually have of doing that?
He has a decent chance. His agenda is not as lofty or as far-reaching as it seems. A lot of it is achievable through a mix of city and state money, through a potential tax increase, which would be modest, through negotiations with the state legislature. It's going to be hard, but there are at least versions of them that can become a reality. There can be an expanded child care program. There can be a free bus pilot that gets bigger with time. There can be a rent freeze and rent stabilized apartments. It's far from impossible. There's a lot he can do.
You made the point in a New York Times column earlier in the year that left-wing populists have been around for a while now. Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, AOC, the congresswoman from New York. But this is the first time we'll see a left-wing populist in recent times with executive power. He'll oversee the largest police force in America. He'll oversee the largest education department in America. Is New York City now going to become a laboratory for kind of left-wing radicalism and whether it can actually work?
I don't know radicalism. I think, you know, it'll be a place for, you know, certain progressive policy to be further expanded or implemented. I mean, New York under Bill de Blasio, the former mayor, got universal pre-kindergarten. It covered, you know, children from ages 4 and up until kindergarten. And then there was a plan to bring it to 3-year-olds. So in some ways, you know, he's building on a social safety net that's there. Free buses have been, at least there have been pilot programs in other cities. You know, rent freezes have happened before in New York. So, you know, there's a certain radicalism in the fact of who he is and what he represents and being such an outsider and being so young. If you break down the policy platform, you know, this isn't seizing the means of production. This isn't, you know, truly throwing out and defenestrating the capitalist class. You know, this is going to be, you know, bringing a stronger social safety net to New York City.
I wonder what impact it will have beyond New York City. New York City has always had something of a political microclimate. I mean, the Republican mayor, Rudy Giuliani, he used to be on the moderate side of the party before he became such a sort of advocate of Donald Trump. He could never parlay his popularity in New York into a successful presidential campaign. Ditto Mike Bloomberg, the billionaire who ran New York City, ran for the presidency, didn't get anywhere. I wonder then what the broader meaning of Mandani's victory is. Obviously, he can't run for the presidency, but I wonder the reverberations beyond New York.
I do think a lot of candidates in other localities are going to be looking at him and how he was successful and trying to take some lessons. You know, I think it's really that message discipline is very important, that authenticity is very important, that ability to critique the establishment is very important, to not seem like a phony and to seem like someone who genuinely is going to care. And, you know, and also the use of social media, which is tough because you need that charisma to carry it through. You can't just tell any candidate to start using TikTok and start using Instagram. It's more than that. So anytime you have someone who won a race where 2 million people voted, even in a Democratic city, it's going to be relevant and it's going to be something people pay attention to. So there are lessons that can take. You know, New York's not America, but it's a part of America, and there's a lot of different people here, and it's about coalition building, and it's about appealing to an ideologically diverse electorate. That's something that Mamdani did extremely well.
On ABC Radio National, I'm Nick Bryant, and I'm speaking with Ross Barkin, a columnist for New York Magazine and the author of a forthcoming book on Zohan Mamdani. Ross, we're getting this battle for the soul of the Democratic Party at the moment between those who say that the answer to right-wing populism is left-wing populism. Others will point to the governor's races in Virginia and New Jersey, where it was moderate centrists who won. I wonder how this week's results impact that internal debate within the Democratic Party about how to respond politically to Trumpism.
It certainly will, and all factions have reasons to exult over the results on Tuesday. I mean, one overlap between all of them, whether it's Virginia, New Jersey, or New York, you know, it was the focus on affordability and the cost of living, those so-called bread and butter issues. You know, the gubernatorial candidate in New Jersey talked about declaring an emergency over utility costs. It's having a real affirmative message on inflation and then trying to help everyday people. I mean, that's something I do think that cuts across ideology. Obviously, some are more populist than others. You know, left-wing populism isn't going away. The centrists are not going away. And there's going to be a real contest for the future, certainly in the next presidential race. But I do think there are points of consensus. And one point of consensus is really trying to avoid the cultural issues as much as you can and running towards economic concerns.
Every single Democrat who has won the presidency since World War II has been a centrist. Truman, Kennedy, he's not the liberal of popular law. He was an arch pragmatist. Johnson, Carter, Clinton, Southern Democrats from the conservative wing of the party. Obama was very pragmatic, somebody who during the 2008 campaign actually praised Ronald Reagan. But does this victory of Mamdani suggest that orthodoxy no longer holds true?
Yes and no. I mean, listen, Zohran Mamdani repeatedly referred to the New Deal legacy, the legacy of the populist mayor of the 1930s in New York, Fiorello LaGuardia, who was a close ally of Franklin Roosevelt. You mentioned Lyndon Johnson. He created the Great Society, Medicaid, the greatest expansion of the social safety net that we've seen. So I think for, you know, for the Democrats, for Zohran Mamdani, in some ways it's about looking to the past. I mean, there are policies that Roosevelt and Johnson implemented that were called radical socialism. You know, the idea of giving old people money just for being old, the idea of giving healthcare to poor people that was extremely affordable or in essence free. You know, these were controversial ideas. So I think in some ways it's a return to that New Deal legacy, a robust activist government, a strong social safety net, a government that is willing to check corporate America, that's willing to move away from sort of a laissez-faire style of capitalism. And, you know, what's old is new again. So I think it's whether it's Mamdani or Bernie Sanders, anyone, they're not proposing something that's out of the realm of American history. In many ways, they're nodding back to the Roosevelt and Johnson consensus that was slowly eroded over the last half century.
And the Roosevelt coalition was such a powerful thing for the Democratic Party, although in those days it involved bringing together the Southern Democrats who were racist segregationists. Yeah. A final thought about Donald Trump. How worried should the Republican Party be that they suffered such a terrible result this week? I mean, Donald Trump blamed it on the shutdown. Donald Trump blamed it on the fact that he wasn't on the ballot. You know, a very personal way of looking at it, as ever. Should they be worried by these results as we approach the midterm elections next year?
Yes, they should. I mean, they should worry about the House. They think they're going to lose it. They should worry about all these local offices. You know, the Senate is sort of, they have a great advantage in the Senate, but, you know, that could be in play. I do think Republicans probably hold the Senate, but it's no longer, you know, an 80 or 90% probability. They should be worried. And Trump was right. When he's not on the ballot, the Republicans suffer. Under Obama, Democrats had a similar problem where if Obama didn't top the ticket, their lower propensity voters stayed home. Now it's the Republicans stuck with that dilemma. So, you know, his approval rating is declining. People are blaming the cost of living crisis on him and the Republicans. And, you know, the reality is if Republicans don't have a plan to steal the 2028 election, I think they're probably on track to lose it. So for MAGA, for the Republicans, this is a perilous time, even though they have power and they will be able to exert it for a little while longer.
Russ Barkin, thank you so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
That's Russ Barkin, who's the editor-in-chief of the Metropolitan Review and a columnist for New York Magazine. Not the greatest of lines there with New York City, but really worth hearing his insights.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.